Members, we're going to call the House Ways and Means Committee to order. Welcome to the first meeting of House Ways and Means for this legislative session. Representative Holberg, who is the chair of our committee, is presenting her bill today, so I'm going to gavel us in. And I think as members are filing in, we'll dispense with introductions of pages and members and those kinds of things until everyone is here. And so with that, I think we'll probably get started with the order of business and allow Representative Holberg to introduce her bill, House File 130. Representative Holberg, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd move House File 130 for consideration by the Ways and Means Committee. House File 130 is basically four components that were heard in finance committees last week: higher ed, human services, taxes, and state government finance. There are a few amendments in the packet to get the bill in the shape that we'd like to discuss it. And the first amendment is the A1 amendment, and I believe that's Representative Gunther, who may not be in the room. Maybe we should go to the A2 amendment. That's Chair Davids, and he also has the A5 amendment.
Representative Davids, would you like to move your amendment?
Yes, I'd like to move the A2 amendment. Mr. Chair, I'd like to amend the A2 amendment with the A5 amendment. I would move the A5 amendment to the A2 amendment.
Members, Representative Davids has moved the A2 amendment to House File 130 and his amendment to that amendment, the A5. Representative Davids, any discussion to your amendments?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. The A5 amendment, basically what I'm looking at here is the A2 amendment. Basically what we're looking at with the local government aides was to not decrease the funding, but to continue the funding at the 2010 levels. In doing that, there was some consternation in that there was, because of the LGA formulas, some cities received more, some cities received less. What the A5 amendment would basically say is that everyone received the same as they did, every city received the same as they did in 2010, unless they certified their levies at a lower amount. So basically, everybody would be held harmless to the 2010 levels. Unless they had certified for less, that simply means that they wanted less. And so I would appreciate your support on the A5 amendment.
Representative Davids has moved the A2 amendment, modified by the A5 amendment. Discussion, members. Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Davids, can you tell me when the A5 amendment was posted for the public?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lencheski, no.
Mr. Chair and Representative Davids and Representative Holberg, I was checking the Ways and Means website all weekend and all morning, and of course there were no changes until the A5 appeared just I think about an hour and a half ago, and there is no corresponding run on the Ways and Means Committee website. So if I'm understanding your A5 amendment, and it looks like it was drafted yesterday afternoon over the weekend, as I was able to see the revisers timestamp, but in the tax committee schedule, because of course this is a tax bill, there are no updates to the website that we as legislators in the minority need to understand what the majority is doing and the public needs. Now, I do know that the tax committee, only because I asked the House staff to take a look, tax committee schedule, which this is the Ways and Means Committee, posted a run just recently, in the last like hour and a half, but that's not for this committee. And so anybody tracking this committee and preparing for our committees, you know, we follow what's happening in this committee. So there is no LGA run and no county aid run. I see there's one in the packet, but we're just getting it as we arrive, and I'm wondering if either Representative Davids or Representative Holberg can talk to us about the process about a major tax change.
Representative Davids, Representative Holberg.
Well, Mr. Chair, I believe this was posted yesterday to the website. I'm not sure the exact time. It was during the Packers game. But Mr. Kennedy could probably tell us, if not the exact, the approximate time.
Mr. Kennedy.
Mr. Chair, the amendment was posted approximately 2:30 yesterday afternoon.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm actually talking about the run, which tells every legislator in the state what the amendment does to their community, and that has still not been posted to the Ways and Means Committee. I checked 10 minutes ago. So I'm wondering when the run is going to be made available to the public. I see it's in our packet, but for people who want to come and testify, and honestly, my opinion is these issues should be hashed out in the tax committee. As far as I'm reading the amendment, there's a formula change for LGA, for county aid, for market value homestead credit. It's changing the years that are temporary, the years that are permanent. Significant sweeping change from what the tax committee heard. And the run is not posted on the Ways and Means site, which would be, you know, this House File 130 has been said it would be heard in Ways and Means today. And so the public who would be tracking that and all of us still can't get the run online. So I'm just wondering, I really wasn't meaning the actual amendment, which, you know, even on a Sunday is kind of a stretch. But, you know, if you could just let us know how the public's going to know, you know, all the mayors and council members across the state for the 854 cities, and I notice all the towns have been changed as well. The run is still not public for this committee.
Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Lincheski. The run, I guess, was posted at 9 o'clock this morning, but it's a pretty simple concept in that they'll get the same amount that they got in calendar year 10 unless they were certified for less for payable 11. So,
Mr.
I mean,
Chair.
Each city should know how much they got in 10, and they should also know if their certification for 11 was lower.
It's not. Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Lincheski, this, whether it's posted or not, I'm posting it right here that what it says is that nobody gets less than what they got in 2010 unless they certified for less. So I think it's very clear to the public and very open that we're not giving anyone less than they received in 2010. So at the point in time what gets posted, I think it's very clear. That's why we're having this committee hearing here, that nobody's going to get less than what they got received in 2010. I'd also like to say that this is as of today. This is as of today. This does not bind any numbers for what happens in May. So if anybody feels that this is the final solution, it is certainly not. What it is as of today, what I'm proposing, and I'll take full responsibility for this, that, you know, what we said in tax committee, the debates we had in tax committee, were that the numbers would not go down from 2010. What we're saying here, after looking at those numbers, was in saying that nothing went down from 2010, because of the LGA formulas, there were some cities that did receive less, there were some cities that received more. So I made the decision that said I want an amendment drafted, hence the A5 amendment, saying that nobody's going to receive less than 2010, unless they've certified for less because they made the decision that they wanted less. And so that's, I think that really clears things up. Whenever, I don't control who's posting what when, but I hope that clears up for members that I don't want to spend all day looking at, well, this city gets $500 less, and you said there was not less going in. Through tax committee, there's not less money going in, but some cities could receive less because of the updated LGA formula runs. So that's what the A5 amendment does, and members, I'd appreciate your support.
And Representative Davis, maybe just to clarify, are there any other changes besides what you just described compared to what we heard and passed through the tax committee?
Well, the basic changes would be that there's, rather than not being less on the total amount, we're going in and saying that cities will not receive less either.
Thank you, Representative Davids. And Mr. Kenny, maybe you could just describe when and where the runs were posted for members and the public.
The runs were posted approximately 9 a.m. on the House Research website.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Representative Downey, and I appreciate hearing that, Mr. Kennedy, is it? And I think that highlights the problems, members. Posting a significant property tax increase at 9 o'clock this morning, you know, process really does matter. And, you know, we tried diligently when we did this to give 3 days' notice. Worst case scenario, about a day and a half. So now we're talking 9 a.m. and not posted on this committee's website, posted in the wrong place. So I do think it matters. It's nice that House Research posted it. If the public, you know, were looking for it, they would never be able to find it. This is the Ways and Means Committee. And, Mr. Chair, I know you have a motion on the table, but my intention is to move this significant property tax increase back to the tax committee in a motion form after you dispense with this motion.
Representative Rukavina.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Davids, and I'm just following up on what Representative Lincheski said. Are there actual changes to the formula, LGA formula? Or just did you do something to make sure that nobody lost less than they certified?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that there'd be no changes to the formula itself on those issues will be go before the property tax division of the full tax committee. What my intention here is is simply to say that it changes it from when it went through tax committee, where we said that the numbers wouldn't go down. But then if you looked at the runs, some cities actually did go down. What the A5 amendment says is nobody receives less than 2010 unless they certified for that. That'd be my understanding. We're not going into, I guess in effect that does change the formulas some for a two-year period. I think that then if you go out further, then it goes back to the old formula. So by saying that nobody receives less than they did in 2010, that in effect does change the formulas.
And Mr. Chair, is St. Louis County that I, you know, my district's entirely within St. Louis County, and I see they're getting about $300,000, it looks like less, but maybe I'm mixing up my two sheets because you've given out this sheet just now. Is it because they certified less?
Representative Davids?
I'd turn that over to staff to clarify that.
Mr. Marks, here? Tell me. Representative Lucheski, can you tell me?
Mr. Chair, maybe you could bring Pat Dalton from House Research up.
Because I'm not sure. I'm looking at these two. It looks like the most recent one, Mr. Chair, is a $4.2 million cut as opposed to a $3.9.
Ms. Dalton, can you identify yourself for the tape and address Representative Rukavina's question?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Pat Dalton with House Research. The effect of the A5 amendment is to give each city or county the lesser of what they were paid in 2010 or what they are certified to get in pay 2011. Those certifications essentially happened back in August, and they set their levies for pay 2011 based on those aid promises at that time. So they're going to get the lesser of those two amounts. Yes, there were some changes there were some counties and some cities who, under current law, would have seen aid increases between 2010 and 2011 due to the fact that the formula was essentially recognizing some changing factors. They will not get that under this provision. This is a two-year provision only, unlike the original bill, which made those cuts permanent. These cuts will only carry for pay 2011 and pay 2012, and then all the formulas revert back to current law beginning in pay 2013.
Representative Rukavina.
Perplexed.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment to the former Tax Committee Chair's comments on how important process is. I think words are even more important, Mr. Chair, and to call this a major property tax increase bill is rhetorical flourish at its absolute best. I don't see anywhere in here where there is any property tax increases mandated by law, and to continue to refer to this bill as such is a stretch, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you know, I we all know the debate on that, and so I won't take the debate on that, but I do have questions about the A5 amendment. And members, and Representative Davids, it's your amendment. You know, just checking this morning, in 8 years, the last 8 years, property taxes have gone up from $4.5 billion to $7.8 billion in Minnesota, 72%, 9% a year. This would be a dramatic property tax increase on top of that. We do know, and people can have opinions about it, but the nonpartisan Department of Revenue, working for Governor Plenty, has issued information that tells us that when we cut aids and credits, whether it's market value, homestead credit, which every single member of the legislature receives, or county program aid, which every single member of the legislature receives and are being cut in this bill, and then there are local government aids, which some cities receive, we know that about two-thirds of those cuts turn into property tax increases. We also know that when we as a state pass on assistance to the local units of government and directly to individuals on their property tax statement, because remember, the market value of homestead credit is not a payment to the city or the county per se. It goes directly on an individual property homeowner's statement. We know that when we provide relief in that regard, we see property tax reductions of about two-thirds, and when we take it away, we see property tax increases of two-thirds. And there absolutely is a property tax increase in this bill. And Representative Davids, you know, in the A5 amendment, you are, if I'm trying to read it on the fly here, because again, we just saw it, you're now changing 10 and 11, or 11 and 12, which in tax committee, and this is significant, was a permanent cut to a temporary cut, if I'm reading it correctly, and then you're reversing it back to a permanent cut in the next year. So, you know, I'd heard in the media, I'd heard some discussion that these were going to be permanent cuts to try to address the deficit quickly, and now they're temporary again. Is that correct, what the A5 amendment is doing?
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lencheski, what we're trying to do here is lower what the deficit's going to be down the road here, and you know when one legislature cannot bind a future legislature, we're taking care of it for the period of time that we have something to say about. So Mr. Chair and Representative Lencheski, what we're doing is we're not saying this is going to be forever. What we're saying is that we're trying to take care of the next 2 years here. And get this budget deficit under control as best we can, but we're not going out forever, because it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense to go out forever, because this legislature can't go out forever anyways.
Representative Carlson.
Pass.
Members, Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Davids, while we can quibble over the cuts and whether they are property tax increases or not, in my mind, and I think in a lot of people's minds, certainly my constituents, the main thing that we need to do this year is have a permanent fix and not just be lurching from one session to another, pushing it off on the next legislators, the next generation. You know, my children are upset enough about what we're doing to them, but now I have a granddaughter, and so I just am tired of us having these little short-term fixes. So while I have to confess I might not have supported the original amendment, to me this one is worse. If it's going to be just temporary and we're not solving anything, and I would think that we could bipartisanly think that we shouldn't do things piecemeal, we shouldn't have one-time fixes. I bet Representative Biskins would agree with me on that, and he would. He's an honest, consistent person, and so I think this amendment has taken a turn for the worse by being temporary and piecemeal. So I hope members will definitely send it back to the Tax Committee.
Members, Representative Davids has the A2 amendment, amended by the A5 amendment before us.
Mr. Chair, what I'm doing is the A2 amendment is before us. I'm trying to amend the A2 amendment with the A5 amendment, so we'll need to take action. Oh, I incorporated it, so I guess we do have the A2 amendment, so it would be appropriate then for the Lencheski motion at this point.
Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move to send House File 130 back off to the Tax Committee for review of the A5 amendment, now the A2 amendment.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah,
the A2 amendment has not been adopted to House File 130, so if Representative Lanchesky, if you'd like to send House File 130 back to taxes, it's probably missing that component that you're most concerned about.
Representative Lanchesky, I don't think the motion is in order at this point, so barring any further discussion, I think we'll proceed with the vote on the David's A2 amendment, which has incorporated the A5 amendment. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Next up, we have Representative Abler. Yes, Representative Lanchesky.
I'd now like to move to send House File 130 to the Tax Committee.
Representative
Lanchesky. I'd ask for roll call.
Representative Lanchesky has offered her motion to refer House File 130 back to the Taxes Committee. The motion is in order, and she has requested a roll call. Any discussion to the Lanchesky motion?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Yes, House File 130 as amended.
Yeah, and I would like to point out that I have a lot of serious questions about the whole process that's being used here. And this first article that was adopted reflects a problem throughout the bill. But being that this is a significant change in House File 130, there's been a lack of opportunity for the public to have input. I would encourage committee members to support the Lanchesky Amendment.
Other discussion? Hearing no further discussion, we have Representative Lanchesky's motion to refer House File 130 as amended back to taxes, and and has requested a roll call. Mr. Smith will take the roll.
Representative Downey.
No.
Representative Carlson.
Yes.
Representative Abler.
No.
Representative Bruce Anderson.
No.
Representative Sarah Anderson.
No.
Representative Beard.
Nay.
Representative Breinert.
Yes.
Representative Biskins.
No.
Representative Champion.
Yes.
Representative Cornish.
No.
Representative Davids.
No.
Representative Eakin.
Yes.
Representative Garofalo.
No.
Representative Greiling.
Aye.
Representative Gunther.
No.
Representative Hackbarth.
No.
Representative Hamilton.
No.
Representative Holberg.
No.
Representative Hornstein.
Yes.
Representative Howes.
No.
Representative Huntley.
Yes.
Representative Kahn. Representative Kiffmeyer.
No.
Representative Lanning.
No.
Representative Lanchesky.
Yes.
Representative McNamara.
No.
Representative Nornes.
No.
Representative Pulowski.
Yes.
Representative Rukavina.
Yes.
Representative Slawik.
Yes.
Representative Smith.
No.
Representative Wagenius.
Yeah.
Representative Westrom.
No.
And members, as Mr. Smith tallies, just a quick mention that Representative Kahn is excused. Members, the nays being 20 and the ayes being 12, the motion to refer House File 130 as amended back to taxes does not pass.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And
Representative
I'd like
Holberg.
To consider the A1 amendment. Representative Gunther has that.
Representative Gunther, to the A1 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, it's all right if I sit right here and have my amendment. Fine. Members, Mr. Chairman, members, House File, the amendment A1 is a state government salary freeze. It is a hard freeze. It freezes across-the-board increases, cost-of-living adjustments increases, based on longevity, step increases, lump-sum payment increases, increases of deferred compensation, and other pay grade adjustments. It does not, however, freeze members that have, or employees that have got a new job title that is causing them to have a higher salary. And members, I look at this as being a move to save state jobs. We have a $6.2 billion deficit, and we have to do some things that aren't uncomfortable. However, compared to other states and other places, I look at California. Governor Brown has announced an 8 to 9% decrease or cut in salaries. The Governor Cuomo from New York is offering something very similar to that. The President Obama has initiated a salary freeze. So I think this is a something that is needed and necessary, and something that we have to show the people that work outside of government that we also are going to share their pain. I look at, we had Harley Davidson, for example. They've enacted a 7-year wage freeze to eliminate eliminated hundreds of jobs in order to keep the production facilities open. There are many businesses in my community that are working, allowing their employees to work 30 hours a week instead of 40, what their whole life was predicated around having that income. And they were just tickled to death to have a job and have the benefits that they had with that job. So they are, this is really tough time. The Minnesota Orchestra musicians agreed to modify their contracts in 2009 to include wage freezes to help the orchestra through a current economic crisis. Sectors outside of government are making these sacrifices. I think it's appropriate that we lead by doing some of the same things. It's something that is not pleasant, but in my way of thinking, it is necessary. Without doing it, I believe they'll have light layoffs that will not be fun for us to watch. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Members, discussion to the Gunther A1 amendment. Representative Rukavina.
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess first of all, could counsel or someone help me? Maybe Ms. Novak, she's done a little work in this area. I hate to put her on the spot because her expertise is in higher education. But so does this undo the Public Employee Labor Relations Act here in the state of Minnesota for 2 years, since you don't allow collective bargaining agreements between public employees in the state of Minnesota?
Representative Gunther.
Chairman, Representative Rokovina, it does not affect any agreement that is not now in place for salaries. It will do that at the beginning of before we write the next contract.
Well, Representative Rukavina?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther or somebody here can help me. Isn't there, in PELRA law, don't public employees get to negotiate a wage increase or a freeze like they did, like they negotiated at Minsku and many other state agencies a couple of years ago? And if this prohibits that negotiations, Representative Gunther, I would say that the state of Minnesota right now, you're undoing the Public Employee Labor Relations Act by instituting this language. But maybe some attorney or staff person that isn't an attorney could help me out on this one.
Ms. Novak, any perspectives to Representative Rukavina's question?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any perspectives. I believe it says that the prohibition is to future collective bargaining agreements, and it's not an impairment of the existing ones.
Well,
Representative Rukavina, yep.
Mr. Chair, maybe Mr. Marks or somebody, but the point being, we have a Public Employee Labor Relations Act that's been in place since, I believe, the early 70s, and this is the beginning of undoing it, number one. Number two, Representative Gunther, you mentioned Harley Davidson, you mentioned the Minnesota Orchestra Musicians Union. They collectively bargained that. They didn't have state law telling them that they can't negotiate a pay increase. And so that's the private sector using the collective bargaining process as it should be used. negotiating. We just had the Teamsters who organize snowplow drivers and grader operators in St. Louis County just settled for a no wage increase because they know the situation we're in, and they also accepted some overtime pay reductions. That's how the process is supposed to work. I think with this language, we are undoing the Public Employee Labor Relations Act. But, you know, regarding share the pain in here, Representative Gunther and others, is there anything in here that prohibits in the Minsky system? I know it's been a, you know, kind of like stuck in our throats, and there are members here, Representative Pawlowski sitting by me, where the Board of Trustees at the Minnesota State College University system gave out bonuses that were bigger than salaries that some of the AFSCME members get for cleaning the toilets and that behind our kids and other students. Is there anything in here that prohibits that from happening? Because that's, we think it's outrageous that those bonuses were given to the chancellor and presidents that were in some instances bigger than entire salaries of employees. So do you prohibit that in here?
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Rokavian, I think lump sum payment increases, I think, would include that. And as far as Labor Relations Act is concerned, don't think President Obama went through that when he had salary freeze cut for federal employees. I don't think Governor Brown had a problem with reducing the salaries of California workers by 8 to 9%. So I can't wait to find out if in Minnesota it's illegal, because I don't think we are that different from other states. This is something that I think if we don't do across the board, we are going to lay off people that should not lose their jobs, just like those people in my district that are working 30 hours a week to keep their benefits and their job. They're happy to do it.
Well, Mr. Chair, just in response, and I'll drop it. Representative Gunther, I am not a Congress member of Congress. I don't have to negotiate with the president. The last time I checked, Jerry Brown was the governor of California, and we have a new governor in Minnesota. And finally, I think you deserve a pay increase for being the, now it seems to be the chief negotiator for the public employees unions here at the state of Minnesota. That you should get a bump. That's a tough job. And, you know, I didn't say it was illegal, Representative Gunther. I'm just asking you if you are undoing the Public Employee Labor Relations Act by becoming their chief negotiator and putting it in law. There's probably nothing that prohibits you from. You're a lawmaker. You get to change laws. You just changed the Public Employee Labor Relations Act, and I just want people to take note of that.
Representative Rukumina, just a quick comment from the testimony that we heard in Representative Lanning's committee when we heard this bill. There was extensive testimony from staff, and there was no mention made of this really creating any kind of ongoing problem or abrogation of PELRA. But you raise interesting points and good discussion. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Gunther, did this language go before the Governmental Operations Committee?
Representative Gunther.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, it went through state government finance so far as we went. From my understanding, the chairman of governmental relations didn't ask for the bill to be heard in the committee.
Well, one of my concerns, Mr. Chairman, and I expressed it with the earlier amendment, was that you know, we're totally avoiding the appropriate process for the Minnesota legislature, and here's a huge policy question dealing with collective bargaining, and it also has an impact on pensions, which also is in the jurisdiction of the Policy Committee Governmental Operations. And so I again express my concern about the process that's being used here this morning, and I'll probably raise that question on each and every article that comes forward. But clearly this is an amendment that should have gone to Governmental Operations because of PELRA. That's the committee that has jurisdiction there, and because of the impact on pensions.
Representative Slawick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gunther, are you going to explain Section 2 of the bill?
Section 2 of the bill.
That's the $199 million reduction. Or Section 2 of the amendment, I should say, the A1.
Representative Gunther.
I can if you would like. Certainly, this section asks the Commissioner of Management and Budget to cut $199,236,000 from the various accounts in state government, various agencies. It does eliminate higher ed and K-12 financing. It does include specific cuts to the House of Representatives, the State Auditor, Attorney General, and the Secretary of State that were not touched by unallotment. It's a 2.25% increase in that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Slawick.
Mr. Chair, I sit on the State Government Finance Committee, so we did hear testimony on this, and these are, as my understanding, they are unspent or unobligated funds through the rest of the year. Is that correct?
Representative Gunther.
It could work that way, yes.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Slawick, yep.
So, Commissioner Showalter did testify about what those cuts could mean, and he talked about that unobligated funds or unspent funds could affect certain areas significantly. For example, he has since written a memo that it could have the National Guard Reintegration Program, which helped returning troops and their families in successful transition. It could unfund that. It could unfund nearly $5 million in tuition reimbursement payments to National Guard members. It could also possibly do away with $2.7 million for the State Soldiers Assistance Program, and possibly over $13 million remaining for flood and tornado disaster relief, and possibly over $20 million in support for Minnesota businesses and the Job Skills Partnership Program. Would you? So those are unobligated funds, Representative Gunther, that might have to be cut?
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Slawick, it does not say unobligated funds. It says the commissioner has the obligation to figure out where those cuts are to be made.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Slawick.
So, potentially, those areas could be included.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Holborn.
Representative Slawick, I guess I would be surprised if those were the first places that Governor Dayton looked for spending reductions. So, it would be his staff, his administration, that would develop the priorities for this process.
I agree.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Slavik.
Thank you, Representative Holdberg. That helps clarify it, although, again, we're piecemeal putting together a bill. We don't know where the cuts are come from. We're voting on an amendment to cut $199,236,000, but we really don't know where it's going to come from, and we're going to not have the legislature do that. We're going to ask the administration to do it.
Representative Holdberg.
Mr. Chair and Representative Slavik, what we're asking is for them to look at unexpended grant funds, carryover balances, any unexpended, unencumbered funds in this biennium. The reality is this state is facing a major financial crisis. The sooner we get going on this, the better. We're out of money. We need to stop spending. And to the degree that the administration can find current biennial savings, we need to do that. And as this bill works forward in the process through conference committee, et cetera, we'll work more at fine-tuning this particular provision. But in 2003, Governor Pawlenty in February did 281 in current biennial unallotments to reduce spending in the current biennium based on a projected deficit. He did that because the legislature couldn't come to resolution on a plan. So it's not unprecedented.
Representative Slawick.
Mr. Chair, it's not unprecedented, and I think we all are aware of the financial system, financial crisis that is facing us. It just seems that the legislature typically puts together the budget, hears the ideas that are out there, evaluates carefully what's going to be cut, and make those decisions instead of passing it off onto the administration.
Members, we have the Gunther A1, Representative Rukavina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You're so kind. It's that good Edina upbringing. Just before we vote, Representative Gunther, do you have any idea how much money you just took out of the pockets of state employees by freezing that, or even the steps, the actual increases that are scheduled in their salaries for steps and lane changes and longevity changes that are in current. Do you have that number so we know?
Representative Gunther.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rocavina, I believe it. The fiscal note says in 2012 it's $16,659,000. In 2013 it's $47,578,000.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther, is that current steps and lanes not assuming any pay in negotiated increase then?
Representative Gunther?
I think that's Mr. Chairman, Representative Rocavina, that's correct.
So you just abrogated, contracts that were in place, that there's language in their master agreement that has had these steps and lanes for years, and you've taken then about $63 million out of people's pockets that are in their current contract. You know, Mr. Chair, members, I hope Representative Davids is willing to put a pay freeze on the wealthiest people in the state who've gotten tax cuts over the last 8 years, both statewide and federally, or 10 years, I should say, and instead of just going after the middle class, and in this instance, probably the lower and middle class. I'm voting no.
Mr.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, is Mr. Showalter here, or anybody from MMB?
Is anyone in the audience from management and budget?
Yeah, somebody mentioned that Tom Hansen is here, but I think it was December the 1st that he took cover.
He memorized all that stuff before, so he can probably help.
Representative
Carlson.
Apparently, they're not. I was going to ask them if they had any thoughts on this particular amendment, but I do have a question then of Representative Gunther. It's my understanding that if we honor the contracts that we have to honor by law, there remains about $200 million that some of which was identified by Representative Slawik. There's not a whole lot of movement, is the point, that those programs would have to almost virtually be part of the $200 million. There's also a large one here, and we'll be talking a bit more about higher education with a future amendment. You're cutting $185 million there out of the base of higher education. This amendment, Representative Gunther, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it also hits the Higher Education Services Office, student grants, to the tune of about $32 million. Is that correct?
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Carlson, higher ed is exempted from the cuts of the $199 million cuts, as well as K-12 education.
So,
Representative Carlson.
Is it clear then that the Higher Education Services Office, which is a state agency, is exempted from this amendment? Because as I read the amendment, it would appear that the Higher Education Services Office is covered because it's one of our state agencies. It's not a part of higher education, and perhaps we could ask one of our fiscal analysts that particular question. But when I used to serve on that division, we had more than one discussion about its legal standing as a state agency, and the language, as I read it, is clear that you would be cutting ESOL, and that their share of that would probably be about $32 million. So maybe Mr. Marks could tell me if I'm right or wrong.
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, members, the language that starts on page 2, line 6 of the amendment excludes the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities and the University of Minnesota. It does not exclude the Office of Higher Education. So, yes, the Office of Higher Education and grant programs could be subject to the cut. I don't know that there's a defined amount, though. The $32 million number that you mentioned isn't necessarily a specified amount within this.
Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding that's what remains to go out yet in the form of grants for the balance of the biennium, but the and on into the next. But the point is that yes, you've exempted the two systems, but you didn't exempt HESOL, the Higher Education Services Office. And when we look at those numbers to get to the $200 million, you'd almost have to include roughly $36 million out of the state grant program to get there. And this is at a time when we have a very difficult economy, and many Minnesotans are doing the right thing. They're going back to our colleges and universities for retraining so that they can get jobs. And I think both caucuses during the campaign season indicated that jobs were our number one priority. And here you're going to pull the legs right out from under many students in terms of being able to finance that opportunity. So the idea that a future amendment is cutting $185 million from the base of higher education really doesn't show the total picture. It was already pointed out that veterans' tuition will be at risk. It's now pointed out that there could be as much as $36 million put at risk relative to the ability of Minnesotans to attend one of our colleges or universities. And by the way, a big jump in the number of students that are enrolling. Our two-year institutions, virtually every campus is busting at the seams. The University of Minnesota in the last 8 years is up something like 7,500 students. So I think we're taking job opportunities right away from many Minnesotans by reducing their access. And Representative Gunther, I think you've got to rethink this amendment as it moves forward, because I know you've been interested in jobs in the past, and you're going to hurt the jobs climate here in Minnesota dramatically.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Carlson, we gave this responsibility to determine what is going to be cut to the Commissioner of Management and Budget. We did that for a reason that we did not know where the best place perhaps to cut. We think he has a bigger expertise in determining that than we do. So we thought that that would be the appropriate place to go. And as far as it might be a bad thing to do, but I think if we don't do this, I think we'll be very much like Harley-Davidson. We're going to have to lay off a lot of people completely. Their benefits and everything will be gone. And I think this is the most humane way to do it.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, what the issue here is, first of all, as pointed out earlier, we're dealing with this budget piecemeal. We don't have the total budget before us, so we don't know what road we're on. We all acknowledge that according to the last forecast, we have roughly a $6.2 billion problem, or at least most of us acknowledge that as a result of the forecast that was done under the Valenti administration. The point that I'm trying to make is that if we are legally obligated under contract for most of that money to the state agencies, so if you back into what's not legally obligated under contract, about $200 million remain. So to get to that $200 million, you have to include the things that Representative Slawik was mentioning, and a big slice of the pile is the aid to our students who are attending our colleges and universities, $36 million of it, potentially, that's not yet gone out the door, but needs to go out the door if we're going to help these people attend our colleges and universities. And by the way, the good chair, previous chair of the Higher Ed Division reminded me that it's no longer called the Higher Education Services Office, but it is called the Representative Rukavina.
Office of Higher Ed.
The Office of Higher Ed.
Well, we knew what you were talking about. Right?
Yeah, a bit of a name change, but just so it's a matter of record then as to which agency we're talking about. But it is a state agency.
Representative Howes, and then Representative Rukavina, and then I think we'll come to a vote. Representative Howes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for Representative Gunther, just a clarification on the questions that Representative Rukavina had. It's a two-part question. First, do we know when the current bargaining agreements with all the different unions that are employed by the state end?
Representative Gunther.
And the second part of the question is, to clarify it in my mind, does this affect the current bargaining agreement that was done under the Plenty administration?
Representative Gunther.
For the first part of the question, I'd like to ask the House research to come up with an answer, because I'm not aware when these bargaining agreements end. As far as the second one, if there's a current bargaining agreement in force, this does not abrogate that agreement.
Ms. Novak?
Mr. Chair and Representative Gunther, I am not familiar with when the contracts end. We can try to check on that.
Members, perhaps we get a definitive answer from staff in the interim, but that exact question was posed in state government finance, and my recollection was that June 30 of this year is the end of the existing bargaining agreements, and this would not touch any of those. It would be forward from there. Representative Howes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It doesn't say that it won't affect them, so I'm going to offer an oral amendment and see what the Chair of Ways and Means says to that oral amendment. On line 1.13, after the word rate. And I may need help with staff, but I want this to take effect after the current bargaining agreements expire.
Mr. Chair.
So we might have to put that on a different line.
Representative Holbert.
Thank you. Representative Howes, if you see on line 1.6, it says effective July 1, 2011.
Representative Howes, does that satisfy the intent of your oral amendment?
Then I'd like to move my oral amendment to line 1.6. Effective July 1st, 2011, or after current bargaining agreements expire, whichever is the later. Does that make sense?
Thank you, Representative Howes. Just trying to make sure we get the wording down so members know what they're voting on. And Mr. Smith, or Ms. Novak, you have, why don't we rely on staff? Ms. Novak, you have the exact wording of what you've penned and its insertion point, and re-describe that for members before we vote.
Mr. Chair and members, on line 1.6, after 2011, insert, or after current bargaining agreements expire, whichever is later.
So Representative Howes has an oral amendment before us. To Representative Howes' amendment, Representative
Gunther. Could I explain the reasoning
Representative
for
Howes.
The amendment? Thank you. I believe if the government or any entity went into a firm bargaining agreement, that agreement should be honored unless both parties sit down and negotiate a different agreement.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Howes. Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, just quickly to the amendment, and I'll say it again, you know, if ASME Council 65 or the Minnesota Association of Professional Employees or whomever has in their master agreement steps and advancements right now, they're in there. They're in their current master agreement. That's a negotiated contract, and you're undoing that. So I appreciate you trying to fix this up, Representative Howes. I know you're a pretty good guy, and both of you are, in fact. But I don't think it fixes it up, because they would have to give that up in a collective bargaining agreement with the state to give up their steps and lanes. You understand what I'm saying. They're in there. Their numbers are built in their current contract. But so I'll wait till this goes on to ask my final question to Representative Gunther.
Representative Gunther, any comments regarding the House oral amendment?
Since this is my understanding of the way it would be anyway, I have no problem. I will incorporate that.
Further discussion to the oral amendment from Representative Howes, and I will ask staff, Ms. Novak, if she could, to reiterate the exact terminology of the amendment before we vote. Oh, Representative Gunther, I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
I would incorporate that amendment.
Thank you. Representative Gunther incorporates his amendment.
To the, Mr. Chair.
Further discussion to the A1 amendment.
Just finally, Representative Gunther, is it your intention then to not lay off? You've said it several times that your attempt here is so that nobody loses their job. So obviously then, as Chair of the Jobs Finance Committee, do you support the bill that Representative Downey put in eliminating 5,000 state employees by the year 2015? Are you and him going to be going at it? Can I watch this talk, right?
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's not my intention to go against his provision to do that. It's my understanding that he was going to basically achieve what his goal was by having early retirements and people normally quitting, quitting their jobs through attrition. However, as far as me protecting anybody, no, I don't have any intention of protecting anybody's job. I just hope that we can keep as many state workers on by doing the things that we're doing today. Because if we don't, they aren't going to have any benefits. They aren't going to have things that they are hoping and planning their whole life around. So I don't have any intentions of doing what you asked.
Members, we are going to come to a vote on the A1 Gunther Amendment. All those in favor of the Gunther A1 Amendment with the incorporated House oral amendment, say aye.
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 Those opposed, say nay.
No.
No.
Motion carries. The A1 Amendment, as amended by Representative House, is adopted.
I could have got you on my side.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Holbert.
The next thing would be the A3 Amendment and or Representative Abler's handwritten amendment, and he'll have to tell us what we need to do to fix his section of the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
I would move, I'm not going to offer the A3, but I will offer this blank one that's handwritten, but you can number it however you like, the A94 amendment. Anyway, the committee process does work sometimes, Mr. Chair and members. We had a meeting on this topic, and it drew a lot of interest. Some roll call votes and discussions afterwards, and some facts came out that I think were productive, and those discussions and additional information are reflected in the amendment that you see. Just to get the amendment in order, and then I'll talk about it. On the third, Representative Pawlowski, this is for you. On the third mention of page 4, if we delete the $753,000 and insert a negative $733,000, so it's a smaller reduction. And then on the, also I have, there's two words we have to delete. I'll say it was orally. On line 4.11, delete 20. And also on line 4.17, delete 20. The amendment, the bill, as it's in your packet, reduces the base amounts to zero. In this case, that would not be true. What our intention was in the human service piece of this bill was to carry forward the spending levels and the effects of the spending that was introduced in Special Session House File 1. Since that time, based on committee testimony and hallway comments and the department, we've discovered that two of these elements were indeed backfilled with other monies, and the other spending numbers were not totally correct. And so, I tried to do the most generous way of carrying forward my perception of 2010-11 spending in these line item areas to reflect the effect of Special Session House File 1. And so what that has to do in the bill is to actually increase the amount of money that we're going to be spending on these topics. The child support enforcement grants, for instance, were all backfilled with TANF, even to the excess. So that no longer belongs it's not appropriate. And so the amendment would take that out. That line item is taken out. The CCSA grants were actually a higher amount than that, so they're replaced with instead of a $19 million adjustment, a $13 million adjustment for each year. And the same is true of general assistance grants, which the reduction is decreased to $5 million instead of about $8 million. The emergency general assistance is reduced from a million some to $733,000. And the state operated services number was already addressed in the base funding of the House File 1, so that doesn't belong here at all, so that's deleted. So
I think it's, I want to thank the members of my committee for bringing their concerns forward, and we addressed them so that now what everybody voted on when they voted for special assessment House File 1 is now reflected in the bill to the best of my knowledge. So that's the amendment, Mr. Chair, and I'll stand for questions.
Representative Abler has moved his oral amendment, self-described A94 amendment. Questions from members. Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and Representative Abler, or maybe the staff, each one of those dollar amounts that he is changing is in those lines twice. And the way I read his handwritten amendment, it only changes one of the two numbers. Is that correct or incorrect?
Ms. Novak.
Mr. Chair, and this was done in a hurry. It's my intention to carry both those numbers forward. So if I need to offer advice to staff that it Ms. Novak can offer that. I'll quit talking and let her say it.
Mr. Chair and Representative Huntley, wherever that number appears on that line, it will be replaced with the substitute.
Thank you.
Further discussion to the Abler amendment? Hearing none. Representative Slavik.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Thank you, Chair Abler. I sit on that committee and appreciate you listening to the testimony. I think it's interesting that the child support enforcement grants came out. I thought it might have been, you know, that there was testimony from the Minnesota counties that it might cause more recipients on MFIP, and maybe that's why it came out. But I'm glad to know instead it was money that was there. For the CCSA grants, though, there still is a $13 million cut. Is that right?
That's correct, and that's my understanding of the net effect of the biennial impact. We've gone to a biennial impact of 10-11, carried forward to 11 and to 12 and 13. And so if you, our best advice, the best numbers we can come up with, the effect of Special Assessment House File 1 carried forward that level of reductions. And so we're carrying forward that into the 12 and 13 biennium.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Slower.
So, Representative Abler, the $13 million is cut. Where is the money going to come for those kids that are neglected, that are placed, need out-of-home placement? Will they just not receive any treatment, or what's going to happen?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Slower, that was the question I was asking last year when I voted against Special Session House File 1. This is merely a way to carry forward decisions that have been made that I didn't like and that you didn't like at the time. So we're carrying forward base funding levels that were already discussed through quite a bit of process back then. So however they did it in 10 and 11, they'll do it in 12 and 13.
Mr. Chair, just to be clear, I mean, it is an elimination of $13 million. It's money that is used for abused and neglected kids that just won't be there. And here we are at a time we're trying to, I work on early ed issues, is help kids grow up well, help them do well in school. We have Representative Garofalo here, and yet we have, when their brains are developing and they're their most vulnerable, we're taking $13 million out of the system that won't be there for intervention with these families. And we know that the intervention is really important. It's what helps kids get back on the right track, get on the right start to school, and sets that trajectory for the rest of their life. So I this is one cut I definitely object to.
Mr. Chair, just for information, just to remind the staff or the members that there's still some $50 million in this fund. So the decision, so that's just a positive help to you, Madam Representative Slavik, and I'm not attempting to convince you.
Representative Slavik.
Mr. Chair, $50 million in this fund, the testimony was that this eliminated state funding for this program. It doesn't. Okay. Well, we should, offline, or we should talk more about that, because I just had talked to the folks from the counties that had mentioned that.
Representative Huntley.
Mr. Chair and members, these particular cuts were made up previously because of stimulus money that went into these accounts. So that stimulus money is going away, so these cuts will reduce the amount of services, and particularly with the CCSA grants. These are for pregnant teenagers, kids that have been abused, and typically that is money that goes to counties, and counties then use that money. For instance, all of the CCA, CCSA grants that go to Hennepin County were used to protect children. So if we make these cuts, Hennepin County and all the other counties will have to decide whether they're going to stop serving these kids and protecting these kids that are already in danger, or whether they're going to raise property taxes. That's the choice that Hennepin County is going to have to make, and every other county in the state.
Members, we have the Abler Oral Self-Described A94 Amendment before you. We will take the vote. All those members in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Amendment passes. Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
To your bill.
And members, I first appreciate the work of the four fiscal chairs that brought these different components to this bill. We also need to thank the many staff members that worked on the different runs. Everybody knows that this isn't going to be easy. It's not going to be fun. But the challenges in front of this state are real. We have no money, and we need to stop spending. It was our intent to take some of the agreed-upon spending reductions that were agreed to in May, albeit they were one-time, and make them permanent to try and mitigate the February forecast. We look forward to working with the governor's office and are hopeful as he works further into his budget process that we might be able to come to an agreement on elements of this bill to try and get going on the hard work ahead of us, and I would appreciate your support.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lynchesky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I'm not sure if there's more amendments, but if not, I wanted to just ask Representative Holberg about the spreadsheet for the bill. And if I may, Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, you know, I actually heard you just twice in this committee said we're out of money, we need to stop spending. And I heard you say that on the radio this morning, too. So you're getting your message through. I was driving in, and it was your voice saying we are out of money, we need to stop spending. And now you've said it twice in this committee. And I guess, you know, we talked about this in the tax committee, but I just want, you know, the full Ways and Means Committee to now be aware of, for those who don't serve on the tax committee, is that there is new spending in this bill. And I know it's being characterized as a budget cuts bill, but there's new spending going on. And, you know, on the spreadsheet, I think the easy way for members that don't serve on taxes to see it is, and it's this committee in our folder, we have a four-page spreadsheet, and on page 2, 3, and 4, there's all kinds of new spending going on in the bill. And a quick way to look at it, rather than on the second page, like line 19, 20, 21, 22, 26, 28, 30, 31, these are all new spending items, members. And what often happens in the tax committee is folks figure out that there's only one committee that can both raise revenue and spend, and it's the tax committee. And so there's a lot of hidden spending going on in this bill, and it's not that it's not necessarily good spending. In fact, we had a long discussion in taxes that a lot of President Obama's national health care reform is in this bill, and it's been here too. So some of us liked the national health care reform, some didn't, but it's in here. And you can see the items from the National Health Care Reform Act in the bill. But Representative Holberg, if you look at lines 40, 41, and 42 of your first page of your spreadsheet, 40, 41, and 42, and I know Representative Holberg knows this, but for members who may be new to the committee or have never served on taxes, this is where you can see hidden spending. And so on line 40, you can see that by cutting AIDS credits and direct property tax relief, thereby, you know, some of us would argue raising property taxes, the state will pick up $200 million in that first column in 2011. That's line 40. But because in line 41 there's new spending of about $19 million, the state will net $181 million in savings. So, you know, what I think we need to think through here is knowing this is not just a cuts bill. There's absolutely a preference in this spreadsheet to pick up the entire state budget, some new spending items, and prefer them above all else right out of the chute on this first bill. And again, the President Obama changes, I've been supportive of. There's some other things for small business, but they are spending items, members. So there is new spending in the bill before us here today. You know, Representative Holberg, can you just help me think through how you, as the Chair of Ways and Means, are going to, I know we don't have a budget resolution yet, but in the past, you know, we have bipartisanly, and I've seen it in the Senate, although they've only been in one party forever, but you and I, Representative Holberg, we came here together, same year, and mostly, you know, the majority has been your party, and so both parties I've seen have been very clear on we're not going to let the spending happen hidden inside tax bills unless it meets a budget resolution. And can you help me think through how you personally are going to react to these kind of spending items in a tax bill? Because the public often doesn't know this is a good way to hide new spending, and here it is, line 41.
Representative Holberg.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Lencheski, I realize we don't have a budget resolution in place in the, at this point. Certainly after the forecast, that'll be job one, moving toward having resolution of this. You're right, there is spending in this bill, but these were priorities for tax conformity that need to be taken care of. I've never been on the tax committee. I went to the tax committee hearing the other night hoping to learn a whole lot of new things about tax policy. Unfortunately, I probably could have written almost every speech with the speaker's name that I heard that night, and I didn't pick up a lot of new facts and figures about tax policy. So I'm still learning, but the net result of this is that there would be savings to the state, and that's the most important goal right now.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, first of all, when we get to the point of vote on the bill, I'd like to request a roll call. But secondly, Representative Holberg, we scooted around the $185 million in cuts to higher education when we were talking about student financial aid, but that was part of your original bill, and that has not yet been presented. And I'd like to hear you comment and perhaps give members of the committee an opportunity to question about what the impact of those cuts or the reduction in the base for higher education would be. So if Representative Holberg could tell us a little bit about that section of the bill so we can respond to it.
Representative Holberg?
Certainly, Chair Nornes may want to weigh in as well, but my understanding of it is that it's a freeze, holding back of the growth in the higher ed funding numbers. And again, we're trying to stop spending increases in this bill to mitigate the effects of the deficit in the February forecast.
Representative Rukavina.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holberg, I don't think that's an accurate answer to Representative Carlson, but I could be wrong. Representative Nornes, and you two were quoted last week in MinnPost, and hey, I know how people take everything I say out of context, so I don't know, you know. Try to make me out to be a wild-eyed liberal all the time when I'm really a progressive libertarian. But in any event, you were quoted as saying you don't see regarding higher education cuts any negative consequences from preventing automatic spending increases. But I actually think that that Minsky, because of the way we had to work those numbers, Representative Carlson, with the federal stimulus package, and you couldn't go under you know, what was spent in the systems at the U and Minsky in 06, I believe, with part of 07. I see Mr. Berg is here. I think this actually cuts real dollars from what Minsky got by about 20, and Skew got by about 21 or $26 million, but I'm not sure what that number is. And maybe, could I have Mr. Berg answer the question that Representative Carlson was asking? Because I think there's not just the, you know, putting in law what we did, what we had to do with the governor's request, and it also, we didn't grab $50 million out of the air, that figure. It was because of the way we could only cut to a certain point because of the stimulus dollars. So, Mr. Berg, help me out. Are we just cutting increases or cutting cuts? Because I know when in looking at what the numbers will be now for Minsky and the U, that as if we go back to the 01-02 fiscal year members or biennium, that Minsky was getting about $29 million in actual dollars less than they did a decade ago, and the U about $37.5 million. So are there real cuts now with that, with what's in the bill, Mr. Berg, from what was actually gotten?
Mr. Berg,
help me out here.
Say your name for the tape. And
Mr. Chairman, I'm Doug Berg from the Fiscal Analysis Department. Representative Rukavina, yes, because of the way the regular session bill cut higher education, because people forget we cut twice last year. We cut in the regular session $47 million, and we cut in special session $100 million, 50 from each system. But the 47 we cut in the regular session bill, also that carried into the tails. So we cut a full $47 million in each year of the out biennium. But we didn't take it out of the tails in the same proportion that we took it out in 11. We took $36 million from the university in 11 and $10.5 million from Minsky, but we took $23 million from each of them in the tails. So this bill takes the same amount of money in 12 and 13, but because we changed the distribution in the tails, Minsky will actually go $23 million a year below their 2011 general fund spending, and the university will stay a little bit above their 2011 general fund spending. But the aggregate cut is the same.
So,
Representative
Mr. Chair,
Rukavina.
Members, Representative Carlson, there are actual cuts in this bill than less real money. And I don't look around this table from Representative Lanning to myself and see members who have colleges and in universities in the Minsky system, and we have no idea how that cut is going to be allocated to them. So I don't know how you can vote for a bill. You have absolutely no idea. It's bad enough we don't have get the runs on the tax cuts, Representative Lincheski, this morning, but for people to vote on this bill that have absolutely no idea how it's going to affect their students in their colleges and universities, I think we should go back to the drawing board and sharpen the pencil up and start over.
Representative Breinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a state legislator with the Minsky Institution in my district, I feel obligated to speak on this issue. First of all, the process issue. Our university hasn't had a time to begin to understand how this proposal will directly affect it. We have already, for the university's fiscal year 2010, cut $6.4 million out of our university budget. We've already laid off well over 100 staff members, including 80 faculty and 5 administrators. We've cut $900,000 in adjunct salaries. We've cut $1.1 million in graduate assistant salaries, and we have no idea how this proposal will affect that ongoing, that cut that's already in place. We have a larger number of students that are being served with a smaller number of faculty in a time when we as a state are pressing our universities to follow through with their commitment to four-year graduation. Students that I talk to on a regular basis are very concerned about their ability to graduate in 4 years because their course sequences have been affected by the level of staff layoffs we have at our universities. So this is a very serious proposal that deserves much more detailed consideration before we move it forward at the level we are in Ways and Means. So I definitely oppose this bill.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Berg got away from the desk before I had a chance to ask him a follow-up question, if he could come back up. Mr. Berg, could you mention to the committee what's happened to tuition in the last 8 years at the University of Minnesota and what's happened in the Minsky system?
Mr. Berg.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Carlson, I checked on that, and the total increase in tuition, posted tuition rate, not what any individual student would pay, at the University of Minnesota is in excess of 120%, and at the Minsky four-year universities it's in excess of 90%, and I believe at the two-year schools at Minsky, it's in excess of about low 70s, I think the number was.
So,
Representative Carlson.
Another question that I asked is if the systems were to make the reduction in their base up, that would be another 6% tuition if they went only to tuition, and they probably are going to do a combination, I would guess, of perhaps some cuts and tuition increases. You just heard from Representative Reinhart, what's already happened relative to staffing and so on at some of our colleges and universities, and I think that story would be repeated probably on virtually every campus. But we're going to see a tuition increase. We're probably going to see cuts in staff and faculty. And the point I would like to make, it this is during the same period of time, there's been huge increases in enrollment. 7,500, as I mentioned earlier, at the University of Minnesota, and I would guess like numbers and maybe even more in the Minscu system, because the growth has been almost phenomenal, if you will, with the two-year institutions as people are going back for job training and so on. So the point I want to make before we vote on this, you know, when we have the total budget before us, we can talk about priorities. The majority caucus talked at the beginning of the session about reform. In fact, people in both caucuses have talked about the need for reform. When I was chair of the Finance Committee the last 4 years, we did attempt to institute reform, especially in what some called zero-based budgeting, which really no state actually has, because it's a lot more complicated than it appears on the face. But outcome-based budgeting or budgeting for results, whatever terminology you want to use, we're not seeing that here today. We're not seeing any reform. We attempted that. In fact, we had two state agencies that worked very closely with us on reform in the last biennium or two. The rest of the state agencies under the previous administration didn't participate. Some flat out refused. One commissioner right in my office just said, I'm not going to do it. So these were appointees by the previous administration, but I was glad to hear that those kinds of questions were going to be put on the table. But here we have a bill before us that's going to be reducing expenditures by about $1 billion. We have no idea what the total picture is going to look like relative to the $6.2 billion. We're doing this piecemeal. We're doing it without any reform that was a commitment by your caucus, and one I think that we would be willing to work with you on. But none of that is happening. You're rushing a bill through. There's been no public, or I shouldn't say no public input, but very limited public input with those division hearings, because they happened so rapidly. I'm told that it was almost a coincidence that the university, the president of the University of Minnesota just happened to be present for another issue and was able to comment. Mr. Showalter, our new Commissioner of Finance, but with a long history in the Department of Finance under two administrations now, has expressed concerns about what's happening with this particular bill. So I just would encourage people to vote no. We have the House budget resolution that needs to be passed. We have the forecast that needs to come before us later in the session. There are all kinds of pieces that just are not here right now. And so what I see is a bill before us that raises tuition, it raises property taxes, and as I said earlier, limited public input. So I would urge a no vote. And I again renew my request for a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Representative Holberg,
well,
were you going to speak?
Just in closing, I mean, Representative Carlson, you bring up a lot of good points, but some things take more time. In large part, these were spending levels agreed to in the last session. And the reality is that when you know you don't have enough money, the sooner you stop spending, the more options you have in what you can do. And this is not unlike what businesses do. If they look ahead, they may reduce their advertising, they may change things midstream. This is just an attempt to reduce that $6.2 billion figure in the November forecast. Maybe we can't agree on anything. Maybe there's not one thing in this bill that Governor Dayton's willing to do at this time. But we felt it was important to get moving, put some ideas on the table, and to the degree that we can cut spending now, we're all going to be better off in the future, and I would appreciate your support.
Representative Holberg renews her motion and recommends House File 130 to pass as amended and be placed on the general register. Roll call having been requested, Mr. Smith will take the roll.
Representative Downey.
Aye.
Representative Carlson.
No.
Representative Abler.
Yes.
Representative Bruce Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Sarah Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Beard.
Aye.
Representative Briner.
No.
Representative Biskins.
Yes.
Representative Champion.
No.
Representative Cornish.
Pass.
Representative Davids.
Yes.
Representative Eakin.
No.
Representative Garofalo.
Yes.
Representative Greiling.
No.
Representative Gunther.
Yes.
Representative Hackbarth.
Yes.
Representative Hamilton.
Yes.
Representative Holberg.
Yes.
Representative Hornstein.
No.
Representative Howes.
Yes.
Representative Huntley.
No.
Representative Kahn. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Aye.
Representative Lanning.
Yes.
Representative Lincheski.
No.
Representative McNamara.
Yes.
Representative Nornes.
Yes.
Representative Pawlowski.
Representative Pawlowski votes no.
Representative Rukavina.
No.
Representative Slaway.
No.
Representative Smith.
No.
Representative Wagenius.
No.
Representative Westrum.
Yes.
And Representative Cornish, was your vote yes or no? Or
abstain.
You abstained, okay.
The ayes being 18, the nays 13, and abstain 1. The bill passes and is referred to the general, placed on the general register. Thank you, Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I might, I think we can maybe do introductions of committee members and staff at the next meeting, given the time frame here. And members, in your packets are a draft of committee rules. If you have any comments, input, please let me know. I'd like to get those to the speaker by the end of the week, and I appreciate your support today.
Members, we are adjourned.